Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to HR Latte, your first cup of talent management whipped to perfection.
And here we are on HR Latte, continuing our series on the UK connection. I am lucky enough to welcome back my good friend, whom I've never met, Ken Ward. But I'm hoping we're going to remedy that soon, Ken. What do you think?
Absolutely. Between us and Matthew Jeffrey and a large bottle of wine, I think there's a night out planned there.
There there is a lot to talk about. I am very happy to have you back on the show. You last visited me in December, and we're gonna kick off and jump right in. I know that you have a new assignment since we last spoke, so tell us a little bit about that, and then we'll jump right in.
Yeah, cool. Last time we spoke, I was working with Nexmo and finished off that gig in January. And then kind of started work with a company called BCSG here in London, who are not a startup as such, but they're in startup growth mode and kind of moving out of from where they were. So we were looking at kind of recruitment growth strategy, kind of all the good things in terms of career site, ATS implementation, all the kind of interesting stuff. And even more interestingly, kind of what's our proposition and how the hell do we find all these people quickly? So kind of a real kind of great project. I've actually got a client in my office this afternoon as well, so kind of I better say nice things because I think she's listening.
You better. She's probably listening. So, and tell us, give us a brief rundown of you. How long have you been in the recruitment business?
Oh, far too long. I don't think I've ever had a proper job. So 21 years this year, I think it is. I did about 10 years on the agency side and then jumped over via an RPO here in the UK initially into client-side recruiting. So I think that's 11 years this year in kind of in-house recruitment.
Fantastic. And you've got me beat by about 5 years. I've been in the business about 15, but have been involved in employment branding in one way or another for probably my whole career. I've always done something that made a difference to employees in an organization and wanted to be a part of that and never realized that recruiting was actually a job or could be a job and fell into it like many people. Was it something that you fell into or did you aspire to be a recruiter?
So I won't bore you with the kind of the prehistory, but kind of with my girlfriend at the time, my now wife, and indeed business partner, I was looking around kind of just doing temping jobs and kind of didn't know what I wanted to do. She said, well, and I remember this conversation, you can talk the hind leg off a donkey, as is the phrase, so you should consider sales. And she's not wrong, right? Sales had always been kind of, I think back then it kind of hadn't really been considered a kind of a suitable career, probably quite snobbish about it. And then kind of back then, again, when I started in IT recruitment, because I'm so old, it was before job boards, before the internet. Actually, it was before email, really. It was kind of, I bore kind of suppliers now and they glaze over when we talk about fax machines and bottles of white paper and all this kind of good stuff. But kind of saw an advert in the kind of London Evening Standard for an IT recruitment consultancy, you did the whole kind of boiler room, sell me that pen kind of interview and all that kind of good stuff and just kind of strolled into it. The advert stated kind of full training and support given, which was a little bit of kind of misleading in that, my first day knowing nothing about technology or indeed recruitment was kind of phone this client and I had my sales director and my manager basically telling me what to say. And it was a kind of, a high kind of turnover business. Nobody used to talk to you for a week. Just in case you didn't make it kind of stuff. And then, it was kind of a huge amount of fun, but it was the Wild West of IT recruitment here in the UK.
So I did a documentary with the Lavoie Entertainment last December. It's getting ready for release at the end of the month called Art of Recruiting. And one of the arguments, and there was, we had 20 recruiters divided in the room, and there came this talk that is recruiting sales, is sales recruiting, this back and forth between these recruiters. And I would say that half of them said, yes, it's sales. The other half said, no. And I come from a long line of salesmen. My dad was a Culligan salesman. I don't know if you know what that is in the UK, but it's a soft water system,
yeah.
water softener
yeah.
system. And they used
yeah.
to go door-to-door selling. And my dad could sell soft water to anybody. And
yeah.
So I used to deny when I was first a recruiter that I was a salesman. I don't want to be a salesman. All my brothers are salesmen. My dad was a salesman. I'm not a salesman. I'm a recruiter. It's different. And I came to realize after a couple of years, indeed, it was closely aligned with what sales people do. I'm going to stay neutral and say it's closely aligned and not that it is. But what do you think? Do you think that it is sales?
Yeah, I mean, it depends where you are in the process, really. And I guess depends on the organization and what their requirements are of a recruiter. You know, as kind of echoing those the words of my wife back in the days before the arc of about me being able to talk the hind leg off a donkey. Kind of, you know, I'm good, as she says, at doing the jazz hands. and you
there
know,
you
the kind of, we built an organization here where kind of, you know, they do the kind of the real work in terms of sourcing and candidate identification, those kind of stuff. So, you know, when we go into a client and become the team, you know, I sell the dream. But also, you know, one of the things that kind of I realized over my career is if I don't believe the dream, then I'm a very poor salesman. If I believe it, then I'm kind of super
right.
passionate. And kind of, you know, candidates have said to me over the years, you know, we joined because of you, which is kind of really flattering and indeed slightly worrying. But, you know, that passion needs to come over. So I think as a recruiter, then, you know, you're often the first touch point that candidate has. So I think there's a balance, right? So if you're kind of just a process monkey, or kind of you're not adding any value to the process, then, you know, get out. There's been a lot of debate here in the UK back and forth in terms of, I don't think there's any real agreed definition in terms of what a recruiter actually does in different organizations. You know, I've had online back and forth with Bill Borman, you know, because of his experiences within his client group, saying, you know, recruiters don't interview. And, you know, I'm saying, well, Bill, I've just got off my fourth interview of the day, and I'm a recruiter.
Right.
So, you know, that's what I do. So, you know, horses for courses, different organizations will have either an emphasis on the sourcing element and then just hand over to hiring managers to manage the next stage of the process. You know, I do kind of full life cycle, you know, in terms of the actual physical approach, the headhunting, the attraction piece, through the interviewing, profiling, you know, through to onboarding. That's what I enjoy. That's where my passion is. The actual sales part, you know, that's one of the reasons I jumped from the agency side. I was, you know, I kind of, one of my frustrations in the recruitment agency world was, you know, I used to talk about, you know, partnering with organizations and you know, being a consultant to them, all this kind of good stuff, and actually meaning it. However, that was the 10th cold call that client had that day, all saying the same crap. So it's really hard to elevate yourself from that when often in the recruitment agency world, undeniably, it is a numbers game. You know, it's kind of activity, points make prizes, which is kind of sad. But interestingly too, I think we as internal recruiters, heads of recruitment, etc., we've created that. We've allowed that to happen. So kind of, you know, and we can't moan about that now.
Yeah, I love that. And to that end, let's talk about how do you, because your expertise seems to be coming in and setting the ship right, coming in and saying, these are what I ascertain as your needs in recruiting and filling out your workforce. So how do you go about finding, as an interim recruitment leader walking into an organization, how do you find out their needs immediately? How do you do that?
I think it's a question of approach. One is obviously experience. So kind of, you know, what you have a theory, at least in terms of what some of those drivers will be. Equally, kind of, because I focus on smaller, fast growth startups, early stage, where I'm lucky enough to consult with founders generally. It's asking the right questions, and also I think not going in with a kind of boilerplate approach. I think I was talking to the guys here in the office earlier about I think one of the things that's interesting to me, and I've seen a lot of debate about this too, in terms of how internal recruiters, what success looks like, how are we measured? And often, you know, the metrics that we're measured by is time to hire and cost of hire. So if you look through LinkedIn and look at internal recruiters' kind of achievements, it will always be up there. You know, I saved £100,000 on, you know, recruitment agency fees or whatever else.
Right.
Never really mentions quality. And I think that's
right.
One of the things that MJ, that Matthew Jeffrey was kind of talking about too. And the reason for that is it's a harder metric to understand and to quantify. You know, there's a very easy metric of kind of, did you hire faster and did you hire cheaper? That in itself, I think, commoditizes what we do. One of the things MJ and I do agree on is that I'm super passionate about what we do for an organization. We are the guardians of that organization's culture. And we build those organizations. So it's asking the right questions. I remember one of the startups I worked with as a permanent employee, you know, they couldn't have given two hoots about cost. You know, their driver was, you know, we need to get a bunch of engineers and product people and everything else. And typically, in our world, last Monday was the optimum date. So it was use whatever you can, Ken. We've got an open checkbook. So it's asking the right questions.
Right.
You know, my success there was not measured by, you know, I saved X thousand pounds on what I could have spent. It was kind of, we staffed up quickly. So it was kind of a blended
with
approach
quality
there.
People that are going to stay,
yeah,
right? I mean,
yeah.
That's such an important metric is how long did they stay and did they contribute to the organization? One of
yeah.
the phrases that I like to say and use on this show is either you are benefiting or you are hindering. Right. And if you're
yeah.
bringing employees to an organization that are not going to bring considerable benefit, then they're going to hinder the organization's growth and production. So I think it's really highly valuable to kind of change how we think about this instead of, you know, that length of time to hire or a cost per hire. Right. Let's talk about length
totally.
Of stay. Let's talk
totally.
About quality per hire.
Yeah, totally. And I think one of the kind of the things that kind of as I've adapted from being a kind of a head of recruitment as a permanent employee to, you know, a consultant effectively, you know, there was one client that I was arguing with over a candidate and he said, Ken, you have to remember you're a consultant. And that kind of was weird for me because I've taken and I said, well, damn, listen
yeah.
to me then. But it was kind of, you know, but that was. Yeah, and you know that passion, as I said earlier, about you know I need to believe the dream before I can sell the dream. Equally, I need to believe in the candidates I bring in. I really struggle as a recruiter, when you have some hiring managers that kind of will say, you know, I just need a bum on the seat because that's what they're being measured by sometimes. You know, I can't do that. I always looked at okay, how do we raise the bar? And then, of course, at the other end of that scale, you've got, you know, there's been a lot of to and fro online in the Recruiter Online forum about the, I think we're both sides of the pond, we call it the purple squirrel brief, you know, and kind of managing and hiring manager expectations in terms of, you know, we need a kind of, you know, a NASA rocket scientist for every position, et cetera. We want the people that, the engineers that kind of, you know, that Google turns down, that turn down Google and Facebook to join us, et cetera. So there's a lot of management of expectations there with particularly founders. The founder ego is often a challenge.
Yes, I'm very familiar. So we talked pre-show about the things that you shouldn't talk about online, right? Politics, possibly religion, possibly American football versus real football. Since I'm talking to the
yeah.
UK, I'll call it real football.
Yeah.
Are there any differences that you notice right away between UK hiring in the UK versus hiring in the US?
I think one of the things kind of, you know, where I've got to in my career, I think it's kind of there's a big push about talking about employment branding and authenticity and all that kind of good stuff. And
right.
you know, I've got to this stage of my life where for a number of reasons. One is kind of when I reflect and look back over my career, kind of even when I think I can't do politics even when I try. So even when I think I'm saying something, you know, that the kind of someone wants to hear, I have a very expressive face. So the face is saying something different. So I've kind of stopped trying to a certain extent, hopefully not in an unprofessional or rude way, but, you know, So in terms of kind of personal brand and all those kind of good things now, where people talk about, you know, you have a think about your online persona, and there's all this kind of this bunkum about, you know, recruiters searching Facebook and, you know, for people's kind of real personality and all those kind of good stuff. You know, I'm very much of what you see is what you get. And, you know, where I am in my career, that's what I want to be. You know, I want people that kind of, you know, I'm no different when I'm talking about football, when I'm talking about recruitment, whatever. I'm kind of, you know, I guess a kind of outspoken, probably too outspoken on occasions. But I want people that kind of actually get that and like that, because those are the people I'm going to have fun recruiting for.
Right, right. And I'm guessing you're not a very good poker player, if that's the case.
I'm rubbish, yeah, totally, yeah.
So let's. You mentioned employment branding, so I want to jump ahead a bit and just talk about employment branding for a minute. There's a lot of talk about employment branding,
yeah.
And people coming out of the woodwork saying that they're employment branding experts, right? And then we're also hearing the shift of sourcing to calling it talent attraction, or, you know, how we distribute jobs, whether it's through a job posting or through social or any other way that we get jobs out there to the wanting public. Or the job search public. Is there a difference between talent attraction and employment branding? Are they one and the same? How do they differ?
So it's kind of interesting. I think we love to apply labels, right? You
right.
know, when I was in all the different, when I was agency side or third party recruiter side, I moved through, you know, interim recruitment. I moved through permanent recruitment. I ended up in retained search. And there's almost a hierarchy in that. The people love to kind of, people kind of luxuriate in calling themselves a headhunter and all that kind of good stuff, because that gave them kudos. I was a recruiter. You know, everything else is a methodology. So, and I think that kind of a little bit is creeping in terms of the, you know, these the bullshit bingo that's creeping in terms of employment branding and all those kind of good things. Employment branding, I have, I suppose conceptually, I have a little bit of a challenge with. I liked the definition about that I saw online somewhere that was saying, you know, your employment brand is what people say about you when you're not in your room, not in the room. You know, I'm kind of paraphrasing and all those kind of good things.
Right.
But actually, what we're moving towards, and, you know, things like Glassdoor, which initially was kind of, you know, the kind of the TripAdvisor of the employment world to a certain extent, and, you know, that's a whole different conversation. But now, you know, how they're selling themselves, particularly to the in-house recruitment world, is how do you control that conversation? Which for me kind of tends to, that worries me, because that starts to kind of move away from the authenticity part. Equally, kind of, you know, as a recruiter, as a whether you're at the sales end of the spectrum or not, you're going to, you know, obviously, you know, emphasize the good points of an organization. But my approach has always been, from an integrity perspective, to actually kind of be very open about kind of the challenges we have as an organization. That way, that the candidate, you know, makes the right choice and kind of comes in open eyes, and that's how they'll respect us as an organization. I think the whole kind of employment branding is marketing. You know, maybe that's a simplification, but that troubles me. That convergence where it's kind of it's all about spin, really. On the talent attraction sourcing, look, it's labels. It doesn't really matter. Talent attraction,
right,
to me sounds like flypaper, right? It's how do we get candidates stuck? And kind of maybe two sides of the same coin. Sourcing for me, though, and maybe it's because I'm a little bit more old school, kind of, and, you know, people like Glenn Cathy and et cetera will have perhaps a kind of more detailed definition and view. But for me, it's identification of kind of talent out there. And maybe that's because I break the recruitment process down in my own mind because of my background into key parts. Talent identification in this transparent world we live in, with kind of some obvious caveats, is not the hardest part. It's how do we get them to talk to us? And I think that's through authenticity.
So that brings us obviously to candidate experience, which, as you and I both know, has been talked about, I think, over and over and over to no effect. Absolutely no effect,
yep.
Because I think today the candidate experience is actually worse than it was when we started talking about this 5 or 6 years ago. Is it a problem in the UK? Do you hear about it a lot over there? Or is it something that the US, North America, just likes to talk about? What are your thoughts?
It's
about
kind of linked in, right?
Experience?
So yeah, LinkedIn, not the product, but I think it's linked in with things like employment branding and all those kind of good things. There's a, you know, one of the things that, you know, quite frankly pisses me off is kind of these self-evident truths that are kind of uttered and then become recruitment folklore. that kind of the phrase that hangs over from, I guess, from the customer service world is that, you know, if you have a good experience, you tell three people, and a bad experience, you tell nine and all those kind of good things. It's that kind of moving of stats from one, and obviously we learn from different disciplines, but ultimately I think the thing that really troubles me is that there isn't a one size fits all in terms of candidate experience. If you talk to a dozen different candidates, you know, they will have a different expectation, some of which admittedly is kind of, they will have a low bar because of how they've been treated or what they've experienced previously. But ultimately, I kind of, there's a lot of people that kind of, quite frankly, are making money about consulting about these things, and there's software products that focus on these things.
Right.
It's treat people with respect, right? Ultimately, it's kind of, it links into things like as a head of recruitment or a recruiter, full stop. Feedback, stuff like that. This is a challenge, right? We're not career counselors. That's not what we're paid for. We'd love, maybe that's what we do pro bono in our spare time or whatever. But ultimately, that's not what we're paid on. As an employee. If someone has kind of engaged with you in an interview process, then you owe them the feedback. And that's why a kind of head of recruitment is perhaps more accurately titled a head of rejection, right? Just by the numbers. and sometimes that's really hard. This is why recruiters, one, sometimes because they get bullshit feedback from hiring managers. I've had candidates that have gone through a 10-hour technical testing process, believe it or not. And then, you know, when I badgered a CTO for feedback, he said, and I quote, "It was shit." And I said, I need a little bit more than that, right? We owe this guy maybe some constructive stuff. Show me where it was.
I didn't like the way he parted his hair. You know, I didn't like how he wore his hair.
Yeah. He's not a fit, stuff like that. Well, how wasn't he a fit? You know, I need something more than that.
How was it a fit?
And ultimately, as a recruiter, that's hard. I do that because I do a lot of my work remotely from my clients, and video calls are a kind of a constant in my life. And, I'll do that face-to-face or via video with the candidate too. And that's sometimes tough. But ultimately, it's kind of, look, I'm sharing this with you out of respect. Kind of, you know, I'm going to, obviously, I'll try and find some, I hope you find this constructive. And sometimes it just won't. You'll get involved in kind of objection handling and all that kind of good stuff that wasn't fair and everything else, and you just have to, you know, be strong. It kind of, it is what it is. You know, you had one shot at that, and maybe that's kind of a criticism of the interview process or whatever else, but it is what it is.
I can remember, you know, making those calls and just saying, it's been a couple of years since I was an active recruiter, and that was the worst call I would ever make, you know, and I would start it off like that, you know, this is the worst part of my job. And then the candidate knew right away I was going to give them bad news, but I would let them know, look, this is not fun for me. I'm not enjoying this at all. I really appreciate you being a part of the process. And if you give that positive feedback, if you let them know, or give them the negative feedback, let them know this is why they went with a different candidate or why they didn't go with you, it gives them an opportunity to understand a little bit better. They walk away knowing a little bit more about themselves and respecting you as a person. And they might take your call the next time you call them when it comes to talking to them about a new job. So with all of this in mind, everything that we've talked about, Ken, when you walk into an organization like your new gig, how do you go about, I know you said you talk, but how do you go about sitting down and designing a recruitment strategy? What are the steps?
I don't think there's a formal methodology as such, I guess, and some of it's muscle memory almost in terms of, you know, how you do that. So one is kind of identifying quickly who are your stakeholders, what are the potential bottlenecks. There's kind of stuff that you do as, you know, recruiter 101 going in terms of, you know, some form of workflow management, some form of transition from, you know, Google Docs and spreadsheets, email and all those kind of good things to, you know, some form of workable ATS that's going to, you know, focus on the recruiter experience and by association, the candidate experience. But ultimately understand what the drivers are of a business. What are they looking to achieve through recruitment? And I think you need to do that kind of expectation management piece really, really early on. You know, this is kind of the recruitment's never fast enough, and it's never cheap enough, and all those kind of good things, right? This is a given in our world. Even kind of, you know, when I was on the sales side of recruitment, you know, the phrase was, you're only as good as your last week, and all those kind of good things.
That's
you know,
right.
In our world as internal recruiters, you're only as good as your last month. Yeah, it's fantastic that you hired a dozen people last month, but yeah, I need another dozen this month. What are you going to do about it?
What have you done for me lately? Right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think ultimately it's kind of, there's a lot of expectation management and kind of, you know, we need to be very clear in terms of what we need from our hiring managers in order to, so that we're all aligned, right? This is not just us. I'm not going to solve all the you know, Ken arrives and kind of solves all the business's problems. You know, I'll give it a go. But I think we need to be very clear in terms of what the bottlenecks are, kind of what we're taking to market, whether they're realistic in terms of what they're trying to hire, all those kind of good things. And that leaks into, okay, now we have a plan. Now, when are we going to onboard these people? Right, you're now telling me that you need 5 engineers by Monday. Well, you should have been telling me 12 weeks ago. Now what do we have to do? So it's that kind of stuff, because otherwise we're going to get keep beaten up continually.
Communication is key.
Sounds
like you have to talk. So one thing that I always like to ask my guests is to talk to them about how do they figure out how to retain themselves as an employee, as a consultant, right? If you're an HR professional within an organization, what do you do to make sure that you stay the HR leader in your organization? How do you continue to grow and develop as a leader in your space? And I've been asking this question for the last few shows. Are there three key things that you do personally, Ken, to ensure that you are continually improving and doing your job better and making sure that the folks that you serve within your organization are happy with your service?
Yeah, I think it's interesting actually when you were going to say how do you stay retained by your organisation. I don't know if that's something I've been particularly good at in my permanent career in terms of tenure, because linking back to what I was saying about the perhaps being too honest sometimes.
Right.
You know, I'm not good at that politics stuff. For me, in terms of my approach, it's honesty. Keep honest. And keep communicating. You know, one of the things I have learned, even in the consultancy world, thing about, you know, people's perception of recruitment is if they don't see you, then they assume nothing is happening. That's a fact. They don't understand the kind of, you know, either you can call it the iceberg or the swan, you know, where there's kind of everything's happening that they don't see. Well, why would they? They don't understand that. So be clear about that and keep telling them what we're doing and all those kind of things. So again, over communicate. To the point where kind of they tell, right, Ken, yeah, I got it, yeah, just back off. I remember when I worked for a company called Playfish here in the UK, a social gaming company, and we were acquired by Electronic Arts, and the kind of the great and good from EA came on board, and I was suddenly thrust into this corporate world that I thought I'd escaped from, and of kind of Excel and all these kind of good things, which were kind of somewhat anathema to me. And, you know, we used to have a weekly conference call every week with, I think it was about 35 HR people globally from EA, where I had to prepare a manual spreadsheet with hundreds of rows, countless tabs, which is not my core area of competence anyway, which used to take me hours to prepare to send down the corridor to my CEO, the guy that had hired me. And then, you know, again, I walked down the corridor and said to my CEO, you know that report I sent you? Do you read it? He said, no. I said, do you want just an email with 5 bullet points about what the fires are and what I'm doing about it and what I need from you? He said, that'd be perfect. So again, it's asking the right questions, right? I think, you know, with all the puff in the world at the moment about data, big, small, or indifferent, I think we as a profession and the HR profession particularly throw up smoke screens through use of data. You know, we kind of throw up and we kind of over-communicate just to confuse and give the appearance that, you know, we're a scientific profession and we're doing a great job. But actually, again, it's coming down to asking, what do they want? Of course, as a consultant, we steer if kind of they don't know what they want sometimes, but asking the right questions. And then, you know, for me, my final one is I guess, keep a sense of humor, keep a sense of perspective. Some people clearly won't like my sense of humor, but I'm my own best audience, and that kind of that's something that that's something that keeps me sane anyway, or relatively
well,
sane.
Well, that's the audience you have to keep company with the whole time, right? So we've got
Amen.
Honesty,
yeah.
Communicate, and sense of humor. Perfect. Any last words of wisdom? I knew this would happen. We've run out of time. Any last words of wisdom, Ken?
Yeah, I think just mainly kind of, you know, I've talked to kind of groups of recruiters here in the UK and tried to share some of my limited wisdom. And kind of ultimately what I've asked them to do is analyze. You know, there's lots of thought leaders out there that kind of, you know, make their living through the conference circuit, et cetera. Question. Look for motive, like you would with anything. You know, we're interviewers, in my belief. You know, make your own decisions out there. Kind of look at statistics. Look at the statistics they're using. Question them. Don't accept. And I think that will build our profession.
Perfect. And my favorite part of the show, and I know I asked these to you back in December, but maybe your answers have changed. I have a list of quick hit faves that I ask every guest, and this is my selfish part of the show because I like to learn new things always. What's your favorite food?
I think last time I said steak, kept it really simple. Actually, I was listening to Matthew Jeffries, and I'm moving toward. I really fancy a curry now. Hot curry since he mentioned that. I think I need to take him down Brick Lane in East London and put the world to rights.
I like it. And your favorite book?
At the moment, I think as I mentioned last time, a bit of a geek on that front. So rather than it being business books, and definitely not the Thatcher years, as Matthew commented, our politics are somewhat diametrically opposed. It's kind of I'm reading something by a guy called Lee Correa, which is a kind of it's called Monster Hunter International, proper geeky fantasy kind of stuff, but kind of set in the present day.
Monster Hunter International. Wow,
yeah.
That's cool. And your favorite place? Favorite place in the world?
Oh, clearly in the office. No, home. That's kind of, you know, I think one of the challenges I have as well, kind of, and, you know, my wife being kind of my business partner and everything else, is although we have offices that are close to home, those boundaries blur. You know, and I think all of us as recruiters, kind of our days extend and all those kind of good things. And we need to make sure that kind of for our mental health, we need to preserve that work-life balance to keep home special.
Absolutely. And last but not least, your favorite thing to do?
I think I said something smutty last time, didn't I? Actually, you know, big football fan, soccer for the American audience.
Okay.
I'll be going to see some live football.
Thanks again. It was such a pleasure to have you on the show, Ken. I really appreciate you stopping by for this bonus edition of HR Latte, the UK Connection. I appreciate you joining me today.
Enjoyed it. Thanks for having me back.
And we will finish off the series, the UK Connection, on Thursday when Mike Taylor will be my guest. We'll be talking to him about the global recruitment, mobile recruitment awards, and those winners will be announced on Thursday or sometime soon. And next month, I kick off the series, Positivity in the Workplace. My first guest in April will be Michael Vandevort, who will be talking to us of how to establish and create a positive workforce. I'll also guest throughout the month will be Kelly Long at Rackspace and the one and only Lou Adler. Please join me in April as HR Latte continues its quest to making the world of HR, the world of talent management better.